Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello, welcome to another edition, and in a moment of glorious, joyful karmic retribution, I see you have a dog on your lap, which is, given Sappho's roaring the other week, which we couldn't edit out, I think I owe you one on that.
Yes, apologies that we might be accompanied by the sound of panting and or whinging. For some reason today, Druid is what we call in our house a love limpet. So nowhere else will do but on Susie's lap.
Well, it's very nice to see you, Druid. Can you see me through a screen?
Who knows? I think you might be able to.
Yes, I think you can.
Yeah. I remember watching a dog, my very first dog, see himself in a mirror. That was extraordinary.
Yes, when we've got Sappho, she was outraged at the front of the log fire because it has glass.
Yeah.
And yelling at it. Yes, and she watches the television when we watch it, which previous dogs haven't. But they're all different. They're becoming so much more individuated.
Do you reckon?
I think so.
Yeah.
Or just more conscious of the weird things that we folk do. Anyway, today, may we talk a little bit about the US election?
If you like. I don't know diddly squat, really, about politics in the US, but...
No, I don't enjoy politics.
No, I'm sure your take is something about... what I called star wrangling earlier.
Star wrangling, yes.
I still can't think of the word.
Astrology. No, I'm going to call it star wrangling forever now. Yes, Lan and I are both astrologers, and we were having a look at the chart of the election. We got it completely wrong with the UK election because predictive astrology is... It can't really be done that well because everybody's got free will and it all depends on how people use their chart. We have got these patterns of the universe that we sit in, which are our blueprint. Mm. But they're always marked and changed by the environment and our decisions. But the US election chart was astonishingly clear. The chart was all about Donald Trump, and it was all about he wasn't going to concede. It was all about he's going to kick up a fuss, and he's not going to go. And that was really very clear. So... that one was quite interesting. But what I just wanted to do was look at his chart itself, because this man is a phenomenon.
Mm-hmm, that he is, yeah.
And I had another look at his chart this morning and I thought I just really wanted to talk about a few things, because he's got what's Mars, which is the planet of war. It was the planet of agriculture in the old days, but it became war because we built fences and then started fighting about them.
But, wow.
So Mars can be extremely good on practicing boundaries and discernment and discipline. But when it's conjunct the ascendant in Leo, that basically makes a double whammy Aries in Leo rising. That's really about I'm right.
Well, Leo is a massive show-off, isn't it?
Rising is usually a showman.
Yeah.
Whether it's a good or a bad showman. But the Mars is in the 12th house, which is the house of secrets, secret enemies, spirituality, if you're that way inclined, and self-undoing.
Oh!
About shooting yourself in the foot. I've got a couple of planets in the 12th, and it was really useful finding out about it, because it's sort of going, hang on, shoot yourself in the foot tendency, stop and think here. So that's how you can use free will with astrology, which is really helpful.
Yeah.
But also, he's Sun Gemini opposing Moon Sagittarius. And the thing about Gemini is a Gemini is always charming. They can charm the pants off anybody, literally, in his case.
But I'm married to a Gemini, mind what you say.
But negative aspects on a Gemini mean that they're two-faced.
Right.
And they actually can hold two opposing opinions simultaneously, which they seem as totally natural. Mm-hmm. And the rest of us go, what? And they also flit from flower to flower. They're like a bee. When they've got their attention on one flower, that flower is the most important thing in the universe. But then they finish with the flower, they go to another flower, and that flower is the most important thing in the universe. And the first flower, if it's a human being, tends to go, what about me? Hang on, 5 minutes ago I was the most important person in the universe. But in his case, his sun in Gemini is conjunct Uranus, which is the planet ruled by Aquarius, And that's about unexpected lightning strikes. It's all about sudden revolutions and change. So his son is conjunct revolution in, I can't remember which house it is. I think it's in the 10th house. So this man did come in with a destiny to revolutionise something.
Wow. To revolutionise or to cause a blooming revolution?
To cause a blooming revolution, I think. And in one way, he has done that because a lot of people are waking up because of this. And the fact that, and also he just is never, ever going to give up. Oh, he's got Venus conjunct Saturn in Cancer in the 11th house, which is totally manipulative control of family and public life. So can you see this man is not using free will? He is working on his blueprint. And it's always wonderful when we do charts with people, when we realise they are using their free will. Usually makes us totally and utterly wrong, but they can go, oh, well, I used to be like that, but now I'm not. And you think that's so great because you've learnt to stand on this vessel, this chalice, if you like, or foundation of your blueprint and learning how to use it. And I use my chart. I learned to use it unconsciously, and I've got Mercury in Taurus. Mercury is quicksilver, Taurus is slow and steady. They don't fit. So as a communicator, I should be rubbish, really slow thinking. And in fact, I am often wrong-footed by stuff that comes out of the blue. I do like to prepare stuff, but then I throw the preparation down and talk straight. You know, I do the research and then talk straight. But I've got Venus in Gemini. And Venus is actually all about sensuality, creativity. And Venus hates Gemini because Gemini is fickle or can be fickle. And in Venus, it certainly is. Venus in Gemini basically means you'd rather talk about sex than do it. Though, fortunately, I've got a Scorpio moon, so we can alleviate that a little bit. But what they are in is what's called mutual reception. And that's why Kabbalistic astrology is so helpful. I'm sorry, I'm turning this into a lecture, but it's one of my passions. When they're in mutual reception, that means that Venus is in the sign that Taurus rules and Mercury is in the sign that Gemini rules. So, in fact, they swap information and they can work together. And you, for some reason, I work on my Mercury around sensuality, which is possibly the root of the sleep issue as well. And I work on, I do it the opposite way round, but still in partnership and it still works, which means I can be a charming communicator.
That sounds very Gemini to me, to do it in partnership but the wrong way round.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But I just thought it's fascinating that, and Donald Trump also has got Neptune, which is what you worship. Illusion and delusion. And he's got it in the second house in Libra. And the second house is all about possessions. What belongs to me? The second house is ruled by Taurus. It's mine. Taurus will give with great generosity, but it won't be taken from. And his, so, and that placing with Libra, Neptune in Libra, means all his possessions are fantasies.
Sounds about right.
It does, doesn't it? That's his story. Anyway.
So I'm kind of intrigued and appalled, frankly, to hear you say his very blueprint is to cause revolution. Is that, do you think, a revolution in thinking in America or an actual revolution? And because that doesn't look impossible from where I'm sitting. I mean, I don't, to be honest, I don't pay a huge amount of attention to politics full stop.
Very sensible.
But, you know, it does look as if it could be, you know, there could be actual, well, of course there's violence, there's always violence somewhere, but it really does look like some of the militias could start having a war kind of thing, and that Trump would potentially deliberately incite that.
Yes, but I think the idea, the concept of his chart of who he came to be and the timing of it is basically he's a reality TV star. He's come to highlight the fact that we are living a reality TV show in our heads now. And that we have to wake up to that because the reality TV shows are with one notable exception of Surviving the Stone Age. I'm going to come back to that if I'm in it. It's a charming show I started watching last week. Reality is all about fighting each other, and all the TV shows are about competitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to win. I've got to humiliate you.
Mm.
And that has gone into our culture. We've become very divisive, very polarised,
mm-hmm.
much more so in the last 20 years than we have obviously been before. Something's coming up in us. And his job was to highlight that.
Is that... So to me, I totally agree with you that polarity is, I think, well, clearly polarity has always been there. It's kind of the foundations of reality. But it seems to me that polarity is becoming more and more and more exaggerated.
Yes.
Is that in the astrology of the times? Is that...
Oh, yes. We had a really big conjunction. We've got a lot of planets in Saturn over the last year or two. And we had Pluto and Saturn, a lot of planets in Capricorn, sorry. We had Pluto, Capricorn and... Capricorn and Saturn fit together, they rule each other. So we had Pluto conjunct Saturn in Capricorn, which Pluto is the planet of revolution. Mm. It's the Plutonic, it's the Scorpionic planet, if you like. It digs down and transforms. It's death and transformation,
mm-hmm.
is Pluto. And Saturn is boundaries, rules, roars, and regulations. So this is a cosmic time of reworking rules, laws, and regulation. But if you don't know how to use it, it's going to lead to, I'm right.
Yeah, entrenchment.
And you're wrong. So the opportunities are always there in the sky for you to say, okay, this is a signal time. This is really important. And also, I can't remember the time, and I may have mentioned it before. I'm not sure if it's the beginning of next year or the year after. I think it's the year after. Pluto returns to the place it was exactly when the American Constitution was written and put into force. And the Pluto return, we don't know very much about these because we've only known about Pluto for 100 years or so. But a Pluto return, if you look back through history, is usually some form of change of constitution, whether it is something like the French Revolution or the American Revolution or something like that. It probably means that the US will get round to changing the Electoral College, how people vote. They may actually do something about the Second Amendment.
Mm.
And that's really interesting because Joe Biden is a Scorpio, and the Scorpio is the Pluto sign.
Mm.
So he's come in for whatever time length he has to dig down and see if some of this can be sorted. Not all of it can, obviously, because humans are humans. But his job is to dig deep,
mm-hmm.
and say, I'm outing this crap. I'm going to lift up the stones and see where the crap is. How far he gets, I don't know. But actually, I just find this absolutely fascinating that you can see that there are... things put in place because there are destinies and fates going on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So do you see Biden as actually, to me, it's still not necessarily settled because Trump's trying to inquire into the legality of everything in a court of law. And he gave at least three of the judges their positions. And yes. So...
No, it isn't settled. I mean, it's completely up to human free will whether this is an emotional revolution, a psychic revolution, or a physical revolution.
Mm.
But certainly Donald Trump has the chart of a dictator.
Mm.
He has no empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually has... he has acute self-centeredness, which is the wrong phrase. It's egocentric. He's egocentric. He's locked into that Sagittarius of, his moon is Sagittarius, and Sagittarius is philosophy. But it's also tactless and undisciplined and unbounded. And if it comes out, it's my philosophy. I'm the only one that's right. It's incredibly destructive.
Mm.
So we really have to see. But this is a pivotal point. And this is the fight for America's soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if there is anything true in star wrangling / astrology, mm-hmm. for the individual, then it is true for the whole too, because mm-hmm. we are a microcosm of the macrocosm. And that therefore, because to me, the spirits are always absolutely insisting we have free will, and free will is what we're here to exercise. And that
therefore, if the patterns in the stars and the way everything is dancing all together means that now is a moment where we have an opportunity for a revolution, we as humanity, as those exercising free will, it's our choice what kind of revolution that is. And that the kind of the soul of the world, if you like, to me, part of actually everything that's wrong with Western culture could be deemed to be soul loss on behalf of anima mundi, if you like, on behalf of the soul of the earth. I'm not saying we are the only part of the soul of the earth by any stretch of the imagination, but humanity and we in the West, and not all of us, some of us in the West, are a part of the soul of the earth, which to my seeing has stepped away from connection. So in, you know, very broad terms, we are suffering from soul loss because we've lost our connection.
Yeah.
And that if this time is causing and calling for revolution, we have the opportunity, therefore, to call ourselves back home.
We do. And COVID-19 is the same thing. She's saying, you've been missing, stop it. Mm. And at the moment, the vast majority aren't listening. And fortunately, only according to ancient tradition, it only takes 1% of the world to instigate a good change. So let's hope that 1% is waking up. Oh, I just wanted to drop in. Anybody's going, why is a vicar doing astrology? That's an extremely good question. Doesn't the Bible say
why
no astrology?
Why shouldn't a vicar do astrology?
Well, there's an injunction against it.
Is there?
In one of the ancient law books on, like an idiot, I didn't look it up which one it is, which you shouldn't put your trust in astrologers or psychics or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those moot points in that the high priest of Israel did do divination. He had a chest plate with precious stones on it where he did something called the Ummin and the Thummin, and nobody knows what that was. But he was allowed to divine. And they also had a form of primitive telescope. They used a star watch on the roof of the temple, certainly in the time of the first temple. So I think
it's not Jesus was born under a star that came from the east, a drop of star watching as well.
Yes, it's very probably a Saturn-Jupiter conjunction, which happened about 5 years before. We know that Jesus probably was born because the dating in the Bible has him born too late. The Herod was already dead when he was born, if he was born at what we call zero in the common
right,
era.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, yes, there was a major Saturn-Jupiter conjunction, and any astrologer worth their salt would have said, new king, new king, change of rules. So that would make logical sense. And they were astrologers. They were called Magi, which was Zoroastrian astrologer priests. Mm. So I think the injunction was basically don't go to charlatans.
Yeah.
Because I went to a bad astrologer when I was much, much younger. He met me at the front door in robes, which is always a little bit of a worrying sign. We don't personally do the asteroids in our astrology because it's Kabbalistic astrology, and Lion very rudely calls them transiting gravel. They can be very useful. But when you work at the deep level of the Sephiroth and the planets, you get enough. And we do the deep-hearted soul astrology, not whether you can't eat gluten, right, which is what the asteroids will show you, which is really useful. Right. But anyway, also, we always focus on the idea of free will. But this astrologer said I had a grand cross with my Chiron, which meant I wanted to have unusual sex with animals.
Great.
I'd like to state here that while I may have looked speculative on an attractive golden retriever, I have never once lacked it.
Drake's mortified.
Yeah, made him cry.
Yes. Good.
And also in Genesis, right at the beginning, it says very clearly that the Elohim has put the stars in the skies that they shall be signs for you and for the changing of the seasons. Well, signs for you, presumably, also in the sense that we can steer by the stars.
Of course.
You know? So, yeah.
Of course.
Which way's north, even when it's dark, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely, and that's exactly why we did use them. But the all the way through the Bible, if you read it on the different levels, it's you can use physical navigation or psychological navigation or spiritual navigation, because it's all there. Anyway, that's my little rant about astrology. I'm still talking. Can I go back to the Stone Age programme?
Yeah, go on, tell me.
I saw it by accident. Unfortunately, we've got a recording thing that'll do a plus one. I think it's Channel 4, and it's called Surviving the Stone Age. And I was fascinated because I'm really interested in this kind of thing now. Mm. And what this is the reality show, how I believe they should be, because it's a group of people who are experts on surviving in the wild and Stone Age techniques, and they know how to make bows and arrows, and they know how to hunt, and they know how to weave baskets and fish, and there's a team of about eight of the
fish we
make fish.
Sorry.
That is my little thing I've got of Jupiter and Mercury going too fast and not being able to catch up with itself.
Right. Like, Jupiter and Mercury combined don't have any commas.
Yes. Or any spaces between the words. Anyway, there's about eight of them, and they're working together.
Mm, great. Sounds fascinating. There's it sounds no, like I'm well into it.
There's no... So it's beautifully done, and they're explaining to you why they weave this, how this catches fish.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one section in it where two of them went off hunting because they couldn't catch any fish. So they had to go on a hunt, so they went out to try and get squirrels with bows and arrows.
Right.
And one of them, weren't successful, one of them said, I need to get back and start cooking the supper because it's digging up roots and long stewing kind of time.
Yeah.
And so he went back on his own. And the wife of the other one, the one who was still out hunting, was anxious that he'd left him in the forest.
Mm.
This is in Bulgaria, in a very wild area.
Mm.
So she called to him to come back. And he came back thinking there was an emergency in the camp. So there was this moment of fraughtness, which in another kind of reality show would have escalated into a terrible quarrel.
Yeah.
In which she said, no, I wasn't calling you for urgent. I was calling you because I was nervous because you were out in the forest on your own and we hadn't arranged that.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm annoyed to have come back, but I absolutely hear you.
Oh, beautiful.
And then they stood in a circle and all of them said, okay, when you go hunting in the forest, you never separate.
Mm.
You always come home together. And if there's a call to come back, you both leave the forest.
Great.
And I just thought, oh, this is the antidote.
Yes, this is what humans are really like.
Yes. But the one thing, and this is the thing that I've learned from studying with you and these last years on Dartmoor, was when they weren't catching the fish, there was a little bit of me going, ask the Great Mother. Because you need to eat now. You're losing much more energy than you've got.
Mm.
You need to survive. Ask. And I thought, oh, I've learnt that. Yay. That's wonderful, but I really wanted to teach it to them.
Well, if they're going to survive the Stone Age, they will most likely learn it.
Yeah. Yeah, they've only got to be out there for a month. But do look out for it, please. I heartily recommend it.
It sounds wonderful. I shall look out for it.
Yeah.
Yes, as you can doubtless tell from my rather blank looks on all of your reality TV things, they're not something I would normally choose to watch. And so I actually did watch telly the other night, just quickly. We turned on the telly and discovered that very night, in a quarter of an hour, was the second series of His Dark Materials, which... Just, we were all so excited just because we loved it and it didn't let us down. The first part of the second series was great. They clearly got more budget. The demons are way better. But we were like, how did we not know this was on? And then we realised, because we don't watch telly, so we haven't seen any adverts. So it was a total fluke.
Well, that's just the blessing, isn't it? That's the way it works. Yes, I'm fascinated by it. I was resistant to the books to start with because I mistakenly thought they were very atheistic, which Philip Pullman sometimes appears to be. But, of course, they're anti-religion, anti the power and control of religion. And you and I are both anti the power and control in religion.
Yeah, totally.
And the power and control in everything because it capitalizes on the human ego's need to have somebody to look up to and tell them what to do. And it's so easy for us to remain as children and petulant children, which is what Donald Trump is,
mm-hmm.
a petulant child.
Mm-hmm.
I want this. I don't want to give up that. I want to play with my toys. I get to do what I want.
Yeah.
So religion has had a protective cover. And sometimes I think about all the people who are being really angry about what the government's doing at the moment, or what the government's doing always, and the idea of siphoning off stuff or benefiting the fat cats, which of course has always happened.
Yeah.
This is a perennial thing that has happened ever since the beginning. But the childlike aspect of us just rumbles and groans and resents and fights it and has tantrums about it. And the only answer really is to stand up for Parliament yourself. Get in there.
Yeah.
Do it. I really annoy people on social media when I say, if you're so annoyed, stand for Parliament. Get in there and be part of the change.
Totally.
Or let it be, because we're fringe dwellers, you and I, and a lot of people in comedy are fringe dwellers as well, because we're slightly outside society, which means we don't necessarily get the government handouts and grants that have been going on in the way that other people who are further in do, but we are free.
Yeah.
If you don't need the government, if you can go out, or bless, thank God, I've got a freezer. I took my last wild garlic pesto out last night to have with pasta, which was gorgeous.
Yeah.
So living on the fringes has its price, but it also has these huge benefits.
It does, but not everyone can afford, literally and figuratively, to live on the fringes.
No.
I was talking about this literally yesterday. Somebody was saying how in America, interestingly enough, in America, if you see a need, societally you see a need, you kind of stand up and you say, hey, here's a need. Who's in? Who's going to help me do this? And so, you know, let's say the need that you see is that over there's a whole bunch of people who don't have enough food for whatever reason, and over here is an allotment where there are lots and lots and lots of people growing lots more vegetables than they could ever eat. You stand up, you make a little association, the food from the allotment gets delivered to the people who need it. Simple and very easy, therefore, to make a personal difference. This is kind of how it was explained to me. But in England, when you try and stand up and go, oh, those people are hungry, typically you then discover that actually the county council or the local authority or someone who we have elected is actually responsible for sorting that out, which in the perfect world where democracy really, really works, our elected representatives are elected by a clear majority working from their hearts and from their interconnectedness kind of thing. And from the bottom up, the power eventually arrives in Parliament. And if it worked like that, it would be amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
But it doesn't.
No. No, you're right. And yes, I absolutely agree about living on the fringes can be expensive, but neither are you or I are rich.
No, I didn't mean it like that. Yeah. I meant that it's... I'm aware, sorry, that my dog is whining at the top of his voice.
Well, he owes it me.
That, yes, I do live on the fringes, and yes, it's very easy for me to get into a place of, I mean, it is kind of, in some ways, the place I dwell in on the fringes of our society is absolutely the epitome of bloody white privilege kind of thing, because I don't have to worry about too much, because I'm not going to starve. There's vegetables in my garden. You know, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
It's easy to live really well on very little when you live on Dartmoor, because there is land and I have access to it.
Yes.
Whether it's mine or not, I can go and pick
the
berries in the hedgerows and the mushrooms from the fields and all the rest of it. So that makes me incredibly privileged in one way. But also, those are actually, or they should be, our God, Goddess given rights.
Yes.
Because we are an animal, a mammal who lives on this land.
Yes.
And so, really, our kind of intrinsic right as a piece of matter, a piece of the mother, mater rather than matter, we have that right to, you know, water and air and a little dwelling that we dig out of a hedge bank or whatever, and food, because all these things are given freely to us by our mother.
Yeah.
But we've constructed a world where not everyone at all, in fact, actually a tiny minority, have access to those things, whilst the majority have no access to that at all.
No, and that is why the majority, in a way, are kept as children, because they can't learn. And I'm not trying to say that patronisingly. It sounds terribly patronising, but I know when I lived in a city, even though I had a good garden, I didn't need to grow stuff. You know, I could organise lots of workshops so I could get some cash in, then I could potter down to the shops, and I would try and go to the local shops rather than the supermarket, but I would also go to the supermarket and I would bring it home. So I would say that for me that kept me in a kind of child mentality, as in I'm going to get what I need.
Mm.
I don't need to honour the Great Mother. I don't even know about the Great Mother.
Mm. Yeah, so just to bring this back round to the kind of political structures of power, when you are living, so it can go one of two ways. When you're living on the edge and you don't really have a relationship with the structures of power, it's easy not to care about the structures of power, which means you then don't fight for example, you know, really fiercely fight or stand for my local government, so that my local government then reflects what I truly believe in. And when you live on the edge, I think it's actually just as easy to become a total child and to go, oh, it doesn't, you know, I don't care about that. It doesn't affect me. Not that it doesn't matter, but that I don't need to become personally involved in it because it's all rubbish and broken anyway. And so I'm going to sit back.
I'll sit with my candles and crystals.
And laugh at it from the corner and say it's all wrong.
Yeah. But, which I've done, I must admit.
Well, likewise.
Yeah.
But really, if I want to make the revolution that these times demand, maybe I do need to go and, like you say, bloody stand to be a local councillor or something. Yeah. But then you get into the place where a friend of mine did exactly this, really cares so passionately about issues in his local area, which is just down the road from here, stood for the council, didn't get in by a whisker.
Mm.
But because in the end, actually, the people who are in power were voted there by the majority in this country, by the majority of people who got off their butts to vote.
Yeah.
And that in England and in America right now, it's so clear that we are utterly bipolar, literally. Yes. We are divided in both countries pretty neatly, nearly in half.
Yeah.
And that we can't sit here and say, you know, that's not fair or it's not right or whatever it is people are saying, because I didn't vote for that. Mm. And all of us in our little bubbles imagine that we surely have the majority viewpoint kind of thing.
Well, no,
but
which is right.
Yeah, exactly. It's super clear that we don't.
Yeah.
We don't. We're divided in half.
Yeah. And I'm going to bring it back to astrology, because you were so right about America and England, sorry, Great Britain, United Kingdom, being different in that way, because America's ruled by Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Its constitution was July, and the United Kingdom is Capricorn, and so is Great Britain, and so is England, because all countries have their astrology too.
Right.
And so America is, give me your starving huddles, your masses, I will be your mother. I will be the one who cares. And that's where the old mom culture comes from, and the children being more apple important pie than ever anybody else, and that. But the thing about when the mum is attacked, Cancer has a shell.
Mm.
So, like, 9/11 changed everything for America, and America leads the world in marketing and movies and all that kind of thing. So once you've got through that shell, the defending will be massive, and the infighting and the control and the protection will be massive. But there is still that beautiful Cancerian heart of motherhood, whereas the United Kingdom being Capricorn is rules, laws, boundaries.
Yeah.
We do this really well. We employ people. Capricorn employs. Taurus works, Capricorn employs. So that a Capricorn country, ancient Rome, I believe, was Capricorn. They build empires.
Mm-hmm.
They go out and colonise. So each country has its own astrology. Italy and France, for example, are Leo, and you can see that in them. Whereas Spain is Sagittarius. And so you go into a French church or an Italian church, they're elegant, exquisite. Mm-hmm. You go into a Spanish church, it's bling from end to end, top to bottom, more gold, 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 more gold, more colour, more this, more that. And that's so Sagittarian. And I just love looking at this kind of thing and going, we are patterns of the universe.
Mm.
Everything is connected, all of us.
So if we're the patterns of the universe and currently our constitution is makes us, I've forgotten, what are we?
Capricorn.
Capricorn.
It's all right.
Can we change it? If we, for example, well, or America, you said earlier on that there's going to be this moment where Pluto is going to return and that's where the constitution was written. If they rewrite their constitution...
That would be a signal point and they could change it, yes.
Right. Wow.
Once you set something in law, you are saying, this is my land. This is the colour and timbre and shape of my land. Not that anybody owns land, but you know what I mean.
Mm.
So, yes, you could. I mean, if it weren't for the fact that William the Conqueror was crowned on Christmas Day, Capricorn, and Great Britain was incorporated in January, Capricorn, and the United Kingdom was incorporated in January, Capricorn, we wouldn't be so thoroughly Capricorn as we are. If they'd done the third one in Cancer or Pisces, we would have become a Cancerian or a Pisces country.
So if, for example, Scottish independence happened, that would create a new way
yes,
of
it
being?
Would.
Mm.
For both Scotland and the rest of the Great
United
Britain,
Kingdom, yeah. Or it wouldn't be the United Kingdom anymore.
No, it wouldn't. Wonderful term, that. United Kingdom when we're not.
Yeah.
We're at 35 minutes. I think we probably better stop. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's been fascinating.
Talk again next week.
Bye.